Okay, we're going to pick up now with this second class and deal specifically in this class with the fourth beast. As we mentioned earlier, this chart that we are now using came from the grand structure of the apocalypse, which I have often found a great deal of help from, and I think it's very useful. Now, as we get into our discussion on the fourth beast, we're going to need to move carefully through this particular section and take our time on a few points, because there are some critical points that need to be made. Now, I will say this, and I'll make sure that this next comment that I have the ears in the back of the room open on. Okay? So for the young adults, once again, when you go to Bible schools and you hear talks, and you may hear talks in your meeting, we live in an ecclesial environment, okay, where there are different things that are said prophetically. There are some different understandings out here on the fourth beast and its ten horns, okay? And so what we're going to discuss in this particular hour is critical, because I think once we follow the progression of these fourth beast and we come to this fourth beast and start to understand this beast and its ten horns, we see the fallacy in any suggestion that the ten horns or the ten toes of the image could have anything to do with Arabic nations. So, particularly for the young minds, all right, for David and Joseph and Sarah and Rachel and Thomas, okay, for particularly y'all, I want you to pay attention, because some of the things we're going to go over are going to show you exactly why this theory that the Arabs are involved in the toes of the image and the horns of the beast can't hold water. All right? The fourth beast, then, we've read the verses and in its descriptions. Notice that it is a fourth beast that is dreadful, it's terrible, it has iron teeth, it has ten horns, okay? It's going to have one horn that's going to rise up and get rid of three other horns, which is a particular detail that those who espouse the Arabic's role in the ten seem to overlook and don't consider. They also don't consider that the prophecy requires that the saints, by this one particular little horn, be worn out for 1260 years. So for those who want to espouse that the Arabs are these ten horns and toes, they've got to deal with the fact that we've got to wait for them to start persecuting the saint body, and then there's going to have to be 1260 years still to go, which is a ludicrous suggestion. So what we're going to do here, as we go through it, we're going to instill some logic in our thinking process. And for you young people, we want you to be able to take some of these points to heart, because these are points that are a death knell, in my mind, to some of the alternate theories that are out there. Now, Daniel's fourth beast. Let's look at chapter 13 of the Apocalypse for a moment and read it before we discuss Brother Bartholomew's charts. Well, I chose to start in 13. That's where we'll go ahead and start there. I could have possibly chose 12, but we'll start here. Chapter 13, verse 1 says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea." Does that sound familiar to you? Daniel, in his visions of the night, saw four great beasts rise up out of the sea. John stands upon the sand of the seashore and sees this great beast rise up. There should be no doubt in our mind that in vision, in the sense of the apocalyptic vision, that Daniel and John are standing side by side and seeing the same thing, but from a different point of view with additional information. I stood upon the sand of the sea, and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and his great authority. So we see in the Apocalypse in the 13th chapter that we have this unnamed beast that Daniel saw. We're given information that shows us that it is a compilation of the beast that came before it. It has a lion mouth. It has a leopard body. It has feet that are the feet of the bear. There is a great connection here for us to take note of. Daniel does not reveal to us what the Apocalypse reveals, and that this beast has 7 heads. Daniel, if you will, only saw one. The others were lined up behind it. John can now see it. We turn to Revelation 13 as we talk about Daniel 7 because we are reminded once again that the Apocalypse is Daniel unsealed. And so we see very important the relationship between this beast of the sea, particularly. All the beasts have a relationship to Daniel 7, but particularly this beast of the sea. And we want to make note in our minds that John saw upon the horns 10 crowns. Okay? That's a very important feature to help us look at some of the critical time frames that Daniel wants us to focus on and John wants us to focus on. Look back for a moment in chapter 12 of the Apocalypse, and I just want you to make note that in chapter 12 of Revelation, when we talk about the great red dragon, and when we get back to Daniel 7, you'll see a connection here to this. We make note that when he describes the dragon, he sees in verse 3 a great wonder in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his heads. So there's a critical difference here. In chapter 12, we see that the heads are crowned. In chapter 13, we see that the horns are crowned. The crown has passed from the head to the horns. And what that tells us about this beast of the sea, which is Daniel's fourth beast, what this tells us is that we want to focus in on a historical time period where the crown, the rulership, if you will, has passed to the 10 horns. Okay? When the barbarians first, and I did not write this down, and I wish I had, but it really look through Eureka with what Brother Thomas says about this horns, the horns and the crowns, because he does an excellent job of showing us that because of this transfer of the crowns from the heads to the horns, that we are talking about events that take place after 554 A.D., okay? And the reason he says that, because when the barbarians, the 10 barbarian nations, initially invaded and divided the Roman Empire in the West, what they did was they basically assimilated into Roman culture. You know, their coinage still referred to Rome on one side and then the barbarian king on the other. They gave a reverence to the barbarian kingdom that had Rome, if you will, and looked at it as the head of their kingdoms. But it wasn't until roughly 554 A.D., that these 10 horns kind of stopped looking to the barbarian that had taken over Rome as their head and assumed the crownship for themselves. So the placing of the crowns and the horns is really critical to our time period when we talk about the Apocalypse. And I make note of this because when we then get to the one little horn that is going to pluck up 3, it's going to help us look at the right time period, that we need to look for a time after 554 AD for this particular historical event, after the crowns have been transferred from the seventh Gothic head, Okay, the Goths were in Rome, and it's been transferred from the seventh Gothic head to the ten horns themselves. Now look at Eureka more on that. Brother Thomas does a much better job than I do at dealing with that. So then Brother Bartholomew on this particular chart, when he describes Daniel's fourth beast, he makes reference to the great red dragon, alright, pagan Rome. We'll come back to this in a moment, because Daniel describes that the beast that he saw was dreadful. And we're going to make note of that word for dreadful. It has a relationship to the dragon, we would suggest. To the beast of the dragon. The word, the Hebrew word dekal. We'll talk about that a little bit more. So Daniel chapter 12, that particular great red dragon with 10 horns. Okay? Uncrowned horns. Chapter 13, the beast of the sea. On this chart, Brother Bartholomew listed papacy in Rome and 10 barbarian kingdoms. Alright? Pagan Rome, papal Rome, and the beast of the sea. So, there's a transformation that took place between Bradley and maintained in the beast of the sea, even though it becomes papal Rome, which is an important distinction. But the body of the dragon is important to keep in mind. So when we then start to talk about the beast of the sea, we're going to start talking about papal Rome and its development. On Bartholomew's chart, notice he made reference to the 6th, 7th, and 8th head, and he listed three dates down here. But one of the things Brother Bartholomew does not necessarily do that is done, okay, by Brother Thomas's and Eureka's focus on the transfer of the crownship to the horns. And that's what we want to focus on, because we believe Brother Thomas is 100% correct to focus on a time period when all the barbarian kingdoms stopped looking unto Rome as being the chief of the kingdom at that point in time. And that's a critical element. Because then this one little horn that will arise and pluck up three others is doing so to, in an effort, if you will, to take those 10 crowns back to itself. Alright? To become that eighth head in that development process, which will take us into other prophecies. Brother Bartholomew also makes reference to some notable time periods. Let's just make note of this before we begin. Some notable time periods of 1260 years relating to Revelation 11:2 and 13:5, and we'll come back to that a bit later. There is another chart that is in the grand structure of the apocalypse that brings some really good points home to us about the similarities in these beasts that we want to make note of. Alright? And once again, part of the reason why I wanted to make sure that you young Bible students are making note of this is because we want to make sure that we see this relationship to this seven-headed, ten-horned beast and the war with the saints that goes forth. Because those that espouse the ideal of a role of Arabs in this ten haven't thought through their theory that it requires them to also develop a thought that the saints are going to be persecuted for 1,260 years by these ears. And that shows the fallacy in that thinking. We've got to start with a good basis and move on. But notice the relationship between the fourth beast and all its phases, okay? Daniel's fourth beast, verse 21, the same horn made war with the saints. Chapter 12, verse 17, the dragon went forth to make war on the remnant of the sea. Chapter 13 of the Apocalypse, verse 7, it was given unto him to make war with the saints, referring to the beast of the sea. And then chapter 17, these ten horns and beasts shall make war with the lamb. So there's some very important parallels that exist that we want to see in Daniel's fourth beast to Revelation chapter 12. All of these beasts in Revelation, okay, I just said Revelation 12, that was an incomplete thought. Y'all know what I meant, 12, 13, 17. All of these beasts in the apocalypse have a direct revelation to, a direct correlation to what we're speaking about here. Alright, let's get into our text a little bit. There was a couple other slides here that have been borrowed from Brother Chris Sales that once again are just reminders of things we've already said, but I thought they were good illustrations. You know, we're dealing in Daniel at the unlocking of Revelation 13. We're seeing the bare feet, the leopard body, the lion mouth, and it's very important. It's very important that this beast had a lion mouth. It's going to show us that in the final organization of things in the time of the end, when Michael stands up and goes forth to the people, that when we talk about this fourth beast, that it's going to be that lion mouth that has a great role in things. And the lion is Assyria-Babylon. Alright? And we'll talk a little bit more about some of the characteristics of its mouth in a few moments. Alright, we also made reference to the chapter 17 connection, and I'm not going to deal an awful lot of time with that, but there is a connection here that is very critical dealing with the fourth beast to chapter 17 of the Apocalypse. Maybe I need to spend a few more moments with this than I intended to, because when we start to talk about the Ancient of Days and the judgment that he will then pour forth upon the beast system, when we get to verse 9 of this chapter and we see the Ancient of Days sitting, no longer standing and going forth, but sitting for a time of national judgment, it's going to be the fourth beast in that final phase, the scarlet-colored beast, that we're going to see these judgments particularly poured out. So, chapter 12, 13, and 17 of Revelation are all different time periods of what Daniel saw in the fourth beast. I would qualify that with one remark, though. Let's remember that chapter 12 is dealing with pagan Rome, and Daniel's focus, his focus, is on the rise of the ecclesiastical elements of the fourth beast. Okay? So, in chapter 17, we're going to have this scarlet-colored beast, which will make war, alright, along with these 10 kings, against Christ and the saints for 1 hour, or for 30 years, and that will be a critical time period. It's interesting to note that as we think about what is taking place in modern history, it is interesting to note that we're seeing in this development of the EU, and I say this somewhat hesitantly because without question, the development of the European Union is very significant. Okay, but I am hesitant to say that the European Union is all of that when it comes to this organization, because let's remember Brother Thomas, when he really looked at Gog and the land of Magog, he saw a lot of, we're looking at the EU as a lot of cooperative efforts. He looked at, you know, groups of people that were submitting to an authority. And I think the EU is very significant, but, you know, look, we thought communism was very significant also. So let's watch how the EU develops. And these symbols that are taking place are very critical. And maybe Brother Darrell will have more to go on about this and have dealt a lot more time with it than I have. But, you know, note what they're doing with their coinage. Look at, you know, the euro here. I guess that's the euro. Al, you know more about that than I do. That's the backside of the euro, correct? You know, look at this. You can't really see it from back. Look at this beast that the woman is sitting upon. You know, they've adopted this symbol for themselves, and that has to be very significant for us. Whether the European Union is going to end up the way the European Union wants to is the question, I guess, I have in my mind. What Yahweh is going to cause that develop into may not have been its original purpose, I guess is what I'm really trying to say. And we'll wait and see how that goes. Everything that they're using to describe themselves as a woman sitting upon the beast is tremendously interesting to me. All right, let's go back to the text of Daniel chapter 7 now, and let's start to discuss the specifics about what Daniel saw about this fourth beast. Daniel 7 and verse 7, he specifically says he sees a fourth beast. And I think that's important. You know, we saw a first beast, and then he talks about another and another. But he specifically talks about a fourth beast here. All right? The Chaldean word is not much different than